Welcome to Two-Way Street. I'm Bill Nigut. Shuler Hensley may be the most famous Georgia theater star whose name remains unknown to many people who live here. That's because Shuler, like Laura Benanti, Danny Burstein, Kelly O'Hara, and other Broadway stars who are beloved by theater audiences, make their livings primarily on the stage. They don't necessarily pop up in everyday conversation about the world of entertainment. But don't make any mistakes. Shuler's a big deal to theater lovers like me. In 1999, he won the Olivier Award, which is London Theater's equivalent of a Tony, for his breakthrough performance as the loner Judd Fry in the West End revival of Oklahoma. In that show, he played alongside of Hugh Jackman. He then won the Tony for the same role when the show came to Broadway. Shuler played the monster in the Broadway production of Young Frankenstein and then played the monster again in his best-known movie, Van Helsing. Shuler's a big guy, about 6'3", and he has a rich baritone voice. So he's a go-to choice for starring roles in shows like the Broadway revival of Les Miserables, the concert production of Carousel, Phantom of the Opera, The Most Happy Fella, and others. And he starred on Broadway in straight plays, too, like Waiting for Godot, where he appeared next to Ian McKellen. Shuler grew up in Marietta and continues to make his home there. And tonight, he plays one of his happiest and most fulfilling roles. He'll host the 10th annual Georgia High School Musical Awards, which are named in his honor, the Shulers. The show honors the work of young performers in musicals produced at schools across the state. GPB Television will air the show live at 7 p.m. tonight. Shuler loves doing this show, and so as we sat down to talk about his life and career, it seemed only fitting to start by playing his big opening number from last year's Shulers.
A musical. And nothing's as amazing as a musical, where song and dance and sweet romance and happy endings happening by happenstance. Bright lights, stage lights, and a dazzling chorus. If you want to be great, then you got to create a musical.
Who was that? That was amazing.
Incredible. Yeah.
Such intonation and dedication.
I wanted to play that first because you are a self-described theater geek, mm-hmm. and musicals have been at the heart of much of the work you've done.
That's correct. Yeah, I started, theater in general, live theater. My first experience on stage was with my mom's ballet company. I played Fritz in The Nutcracker, believe it or not, once this body could actually dance. But then I sort of fell in love with the magic of live theater, and that developed into singing opera, but knowing I got the opera training, but knowing I always wanted to do more musicals. And just the fact of having a bunch of people on stage singing and dancing and acting and creating these worlds, I've never grown up in that regard.
Your parents are an interesting, they were an interesting couple. Your mom has passed away,
yes.
but they come from very different worlds. Tell
right.
us about them. Tell us about Iris, your mom.
My mom, Iris Antley Hensley, she was born and raised in Marietta, and she started the Cobb Ballet, which is now the Georgia Ballet, and was the artistic director of that for 40-plus years. And she was also a Georgia Bulldog cheerleader, which was interesting because my father, who is an engineer, or was an engineer, he was a All-American football player at Georgia Tech. I had a love of sports and a love of theater, which was unusual, I think, as a kid growing up, but really felt the pull probably through my mom of
New York. She wanted you to be a Broadway dancer.
She
did,
well,
right?
She wanted me to go to Broadway, that's for sure. And you know, I also, when I was dancing with her ballet company, I was also at the Atlanta Boy Choir with Fletcher Wolf, and they would travel the world, and we sang for the Pope and went to Jimmy Carter's inauguration. We sang on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. So all those events in my childhood really sort of have created that love of art in general.
You and I share something in common from high school. I was a football player,
mm-hmm.
but I was also drawn to the stage.
Yes.
And my football coach said, if you dare, you're out of here.
I've had those conversations.
Yeah, I snuck around him one day and went and auditioned for the spring variety show. They asked me to sing April Showers, and the coach heard I was in there auditioning and came and grabbed me and dragged me out of the auditorium.
It's funny, isn't it? I had the you know, even at Westminster, I think it was the time, you know, we're talking the mid-80s, to do art and to do sports, they were rivals. Really, I knew from 6 years old that I wanted to be in the arts.
Your dad was also a member of the Georgia State Senate.
Yes, he was.
Sam Hensley.
Yes. And more importantly, he was also the principal cannon operator for the Nutcracker backstage of Mom's production. And, you know, the mice and the soldiers are fighting, and it's a pivotal part of the production, and he never missed it.
What are the early shows that your mom took you to see that really have remained in memory for you?
As far as musicals, Mom was big on trying to get us to New York to see Broadway. So my first two experiences on Broadway were seeing John Goodman in Big River as the Pops. Your dad, gum government, you're sorry so-and-so's, you know, and seeing this big man on stage just sort of take the stage was, we went up there the year that Les Mis first came out, I think it was 87, and the tickets, you couldn't be had, but my brother, my mom, and I went up there, and I said, I'm going to stand in line to see if I can get, you know, some turn-ins. The whole day was spent just waiting for that ticket, and I finally got to the front of the line, and the curtain came up from the ticket booth, and she said, how many tickets do you need? And I said, I need 3. And she looked at me and said, well, all I've got is 3 third row center. So being there all day, third row center, and hearing Bring Him Home, and the original cast for that show, Colm Wilkinson singing that, which is later I found out, you know, that was my Broadway debut, was
you
singing Javert.
Javert, yes. in like 2000, I think?
And you had a big, big song in that show.
How does that song go? I mean, what would if people... Sure, what I'm really trying to do is get you to sing a
there,
couple.
Out in the darkness, a fugitive running, fallen from grace, fallen from grace. You could have just asked me.
You're right, I should have.
I've got to say, that show in particular, was a defining moment for me. And then when I did it on Broadway, the defining moment was playing Javert during 9/11. And we closed down Broadway for 2 days, and then it was, you know, when you experience that living in New York, and you're saying, what am I doing with my life? I mean, does it matter that I'm an actor and a singer on Broadway? I mean, in the grand scheme of things. And then the first day back to perform for maybe 200 people in the audience, I mean, people were still not going to the theater, but every person in the theater came to the stage door, and they said, thank you for allowing us to escape for 2.5 hours. And then that was like a light bulb. I'm like, that's an important part of the human condition, is to be able to be transported from things like 9/11 and be inspired and escape for that.
Yeah.
And so that shows a tremendous importance to me.
Can we talk about Oklahoma?
Sure.
It was really the show that put you on the map in a very big way. You you did it on the West End. Hugh Jackman played Curly. And the reviews for you were overwhelming. The Daily Telegraph said, I have never seen better acting in a musical. Shuler Hensley takes the audience into a heart of lonely darkness as Judd Fry. Who is Judd Fry in Oklahoma?
Judd Fry, to me, is the man that wants to fit in, that wants to be like everyone else, that wants what everyone else wants, and that's love, acceptance. And for whatever reason, his path in life has sort of defined him as the opposite of that. That was threatened when Curly came back. And what's interesting about Lonely Room, which is Judd's song that was not in the movie, I think it helps to fully define and to give the audience a chance to see this character. His hopes and dreams are the things that everyone has. And that's what made this character so much deeper in the theatrical production than in the film. As an actor, and you'll hear this from actors, is that you can't play like a psychopath or a villain. No one really considers themselves those roles. Like a true crazy psychopath or a villain would think, I'm right. I'm right and everyone else is wrong. And so in order to be truthful to the character and how they see things, I think you've got to embrace the fact that that may be their belief.
Let's listen to a little of Lonely Room.
The floor creaks, the door squeaks. There's a field mouse nibbling on a broom. And I sit by myself, like a cobweb on the shelf, by myself in a lonely room. But when there's a moon in my window, and it slants down a beam across my bed, and the shatter of a tree starts a dancing on the wall, and a dream starts a dancing in my head, and all of the things that I wish for turn out like I want.
I worked with Mary Rogers, Richard Rogers' daughter, and we talked, and she was a huge fan of this production, and she said that her father considered Lonely Room to be one of the greatest songs that he ever wrote, ever.
You once said that acting is a 24/7 job.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It's taking every moment in life, every life experience, and being aware of it. Awareness is the key to learning acting. It's learning to be believable. It's just like this moment right now. If you're aware and in this moment, I will remember it. And there's something I can use, whether it's emotionally or visually or physically, that'll inform me of a character in a later production.
Yeah, I think one of the things I heard you say about that is it's like going out to the park and sitting on the bench and just
there's
observing.
Nothing better than to watch people walk and do what they do every day and not knowing they're being observed. Because, you know, once you say action or once you go on, there's a human tendency to want to indicate. But when you see people in Central Park who are walking or have an interesting way of carrying themselves or doing daily tasks, they don't know you're watching, and those are those moments which are the real learning moments as an actor.
Can we talk about another show of yours?
Yes, please.
I saw another one of your Broadway shows, I'm glad to say. It was, I think, the second time that you got to play Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just listen for a moment to your big number in Young Frankenstein. So let me set it up. When does Putting on the Ritz come in?
It's actually the first introduction to the world, to the public, of this creature that has been created in the castle.
So the audience hasn't seen you yet.
Mm-mm.
We're going to play the song, but before we do, what's it like realizing that the audience is about to see you as Frankenstein's monster for the first time, and that many of them in that audience are well aware of this scene from the movie version of Young Frankenstein. What was that like backstage every night in the green room or in the wings as you waited to enter?
Well, I'll tell you what was super helpful about the whole process of the Young Frankenstein, the musical, was the fact that Mel Brooks guided us through it, and the creator of the film and everything Young Frankenstein was there in the room with us. So day one, he said, this is not the film. I'm telling you, we're not going to do the film. So it was like from that moment on, you really felt like you were going to create something new. Now, like you say, this song, everyone grew up with it. It's an iconic moment in cinematic history.
Let's listen first, and then we'll talk about it.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Monoliths!
Different types, you wear a day coat, pants with stripes, and cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying hard to look like Gary Cooper.
That's you and Roger Bart, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The great Roger Bart, who most people remember first from the Broadway production of Mel Brooks' The Producers.
Yes, exactly. Roger's genius. He really is. And that was another hugely important thing, is to have the right cast. And what's interesting about that is, I just did finish the revival, opening the revival of this in London. And Mel once again was involved in that. And Mel's preaching about his comedy, his style of comedy, is that you never play the funny. You play everything as if it's absolutely invested in being serious and understood, and that thus makes the comedy funnier. So in putting on the Ritz, the humor is that you've got a monster trying to speak and can't sing, but as the monster, you're thinking, this is my big moment. This is my solo. I'm going to blow him away. It's going to be one of them. And when they react by laughing or whatever, usually it's we have to hold the song. It's not how funny that is, but it's like, that's not really what I was expecting. So let me try it. And then the second one is actually more of a question mark, because it's like, wait, this isn't the way we rehearsed it. They're not putting on the wrist is a question mark. So
I thought about that when I listened to it.
But then it's a journey of the laughter, thinking it's at you, and then realizing that the laughter is with you. And then the song becomes a joyous thing for everybody involved.
You just gave us a textbook example about how you think through a part. Because what you just described was not how Shuler Hensley was intellectualizing that. It was how the monster was.
And that's the thing. That's what's great about being on the, once you put on the costumes and the clothes and the paint in this case, you can look in a mirror and you're no longer yourself, but you can really allow yourself to be whatever that is.
There's another interesting aspect of that particular number. Tell us about the footwear that you had.
Right. 4-inch platform shoes that were bought at some gothic apparel shop, which are not designed for dancing.
And it was a dance number.
Yes. Susan Stroman, well, that's her genius, is Susan Stroman, who I've worked with so many times. She's able to make everyone look good based on your abilities. So knowing the limits of dancing in those kind of shoes, she created a whole a dance of real wonderful dancers around the monster, and he could join in. And it, you know, is the illusion of him doing all the steps and being a part of that big number. and wearing, and I wore ankle guards underneath those boots, because if you slide off a 4-inch platform shoe, you're going to bust something. So,
as I said, I know you did at least 2 Frankenstein monsters. Mm-hmm. And for those people who aren't particularly interested in Broadway theater, there are many, many people who saw you in the movie Van Helsing, where you played the monster.
Oh, my God. The Frankenstein monster.
Monster! Who's the monster here? I have done nothing wrong, and yet you and your kind all wish me dead.
That's you and Kate Beckinsale.
Mm-hmm.
There's a theme here that emerges, starting with Judd Fry,
mm-hmm.
moving to Frankenstein's monster in Young Frankenstein, and then in Van Helsing, you take monsters and try to help us understand the humanity inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
As a character actor, and given my size and demeanor to begin with, I'm a big guy, it always struck me as interesting to play the characters that people think they understand, or think they've got they can define by first impression or by appearance, which is what we do in life, and unfortunately. But to give characters who are stereotyped into a certain category, give them a relatable qualities that we all have, gives a little bit of question marks in people's minds, like, just for a moment, you know, maybe he's not so bad, or maybe, you know what, I can understand why he reacts that way. Those are those moments where I think theater and any kind of art form really are worth their weight in gold, because you can take a person that you wouldn't think you have anything in common with and for one brief second or moment relate. And that's what interests me about playing classically described villains or monsters. You know, if you really want to be honest, there's a villain and a monster in all of us. We all have them. So why not have a villain or monster who has a redeemable quality in them? Because we're human beings.
It's really interesting for me to hear you say that. Like you, I'm bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about 6'3". When you're a big guy,
yeah,
people have expectations of the kind of person you are. If you have a louder voice, which I do, you realize that you might be intimidating people. You might be talking with a forcefulness that you don't really intend at all.
Mm-hmm.
And people who don't know you make very clear impressions of the kind of person they're stay away from me.
Right.
Have you struggled with that off stage through your life?
I have. Being a college athlete and having worked out, and you know, I was at my height, I was a big, big guy. You know, I carried weight and singing and having a lower voice vocally tends towards that stereotypical dark character, scary guy. But you know, that's what's interesting, is I know from firsthand experience that there's so much more to me than that. And I think we all struggle with, what do I appear to be to other people? And then a lot of your life is spent showing people the other sides of your being. But what's an advantage to people like of our stature is that knowing that that is a stereotypical response to just our physicalness, we don't have to play that. Now, because I'm a big, scary-looking guy, I don't need to play scary.
You're not scary.
No, right? You know me.
So you're on your way to the UK in the next couple days. You're going to reprise your role in a play called The Whale, which you did at Playwrights Horizon in New York. Tell us about The Whale.
The Whale is a play written by Sam Hunter that we did at Playwrights Horizons, and it's basically a story about a 600-pound morbidly obese gay online tutor. Now, talk about a character actor wanting to get his chops into something. It's all the stereotypes that you can imagine in one overweight person who's trapped basically in their apartment. And it's the whole play centers around being able to, knowing you're dying.
He's eating himself.
He is. And he's at a point where there's not going to be any way out of this medically. So he wants to talk to the people in his life that he's either felt like he's wronged or felt like he's neglected. And it's a chance to sort of come to terms with his life. And it's a small theater, and everything that's happening, it's as if we're flies on the wall as the audience. And it was a hugely profound piece of theater for me as an actor, but for also the audience. And to this day, that was about 5 years ago. To this day, there's not a moment that I meet people who know my work that they don't talk about The Whale. So I've always, it's been one of those passion projects to try to get it to the UK, because my wife is British and I love working in England, and we're going to do that.
We will post on the Two-Way Street website a photograph of you in the fat suit mm-hmm. that you wear to make you 600 pounds.
Well, he's an online tutor of essays.
Yeah.
And this was a essay that his daughter wrote that she wasn't even aware that he knew. He's been separated from her for 15 years, but has watched from afar her grow up. And he keeps this story of the whale and Ahab on his person. And whenever he gets physically, like a minor heart attack or something physically scary happens to him, he reads this, or he doesn't read it, he's memorized it.
In the course of this book, the pirate Ahab encounters many hardships. His entire life is set around trying to kill a certain whale. I think this is sad because the whale has no emotion and doesn't know how bad Ahab wants to kill him. He's just a poor, big animal. I feel bad for Ahab as well, because he thinks his life will be better if he can just kill this whale. But in reality, it won't help him at all. This book made me think about my own life. This book made me think about my own life. This book made me think about my own life.
What is the fat suit like? I mean, it's one thing to put on a fat suit that makes you 300 pounds. It's another to put one on that makes you 600 pounds.
Yeah, it's a major part of the character development is to have I love changing physicality and appearance from what I normally look like, and it just informs you 24/7 about the struggle with that kind of weight, because the suit itself is not 600 pounds, but
right.
it's about 95 pounds. Enough weight to feel it's a struggle to move in ways that you normally take for granted. And then the sheer size of the suit is the other thing that helps inform you as a character. And what's interesting is you immediately meet this character, and the initial visual reaction is shock, horror, disgust. Oh my God, how can somebody let themselves get this big? Oh, this is gross. I don't know if I want to see this. And that's the beginning first 15 seconds of the play. And then by the end, you are that person. We're all that person. And that's that. How can you not be wanting to do this as a living when you can take those kind of journeys with people for a couple of hours?
I want to go back to where we started as we move toward a finish. You've been very generous with your time. I want to play again the song that we started with. And now I'd like you to talk with me about what that was from and what it's all about.
It's a musical, a musical. And nothing's as amazing as a musical, where song and dance and sweet romance and happy endings happen.
That was the opening number of an evening that's named in your honor, the Schuller Awards.
Right. The Georgia High School Musical Theater Awards. I've come back, you know, over my life in the theater and TV and film and the arts, I can vividly remember those moments that define me as a teenager, knowing I'm going to do this for my life. Now, whether or not everyone who has those moments end up doing it for a living, that's different, but to have it be a part of their life and a major part of their life, that's what's important to me. So coming and working with the Georgia High School Musical Theater kids, and knowing how, when, you know, we were their age, how it was rough to go from theater and sports and shows like Glee and Smash, and those things really sort of redefined what was acceptable and what is acceptable as a teenager. And it's kind of cool to be in theater, which I'm loving to see, because not only does it create a positive energy for teenagers, but you're getting teenagers who are so amazingly talented that may not otherwise ever show that talent because of embarrassment, because I won't be accepted at school, blah, you know, the list goes on and on. But because now we have 75 high schools involved, thousands of these kids, and they're coming from every region of the state of Georgia, and they all are amazingly talented.
It's interesting to see you, Schuller Hensley, at that evening, because watching your work in a scripted play or musical, you have control, you're disciplined. You are such a total ham at the Schuller
right,
Award
right.
show. You're just the goofiest guy up there, and the kids love that.
It's true. Well, this is the other thing about being an actor is, you know, I've talked about all these people that come in and out of my life and teach you things. And I'll go back to Ian McKellen. And I asked him, he did a shout out for the Schuller Awards. And I asked him, I said, Ian, this is for, you know, teenagers who are going into theater, musical theater, who, you know, do you have any advice? What would be your advice? And he said, they must understand that you must be willing to play the fool. And that's gold, because that's what I want. That's what I would love. That's what I like to do at the award show, is to play that fool and say, you know, you can make a fool of yourself. You can have a great time, and it's okay to do that. And people love it, and you can be embraced for it.
If you want to learn more about Schuller Hensley, we've posted information on the Two-Way Street website at gpb.org/TWS. You can see a picture of what Schuller looks like wearing the fat suit that turns him into a 600-pound man for The Whale. We've also posted a video of Schuller's Olivier and Tony Award-winning performance in the revival of Oklahoma. That's it for us for this week's show. Our senior producer is Jenny Ament. Jenny edited the show. Our producer is Olivia Rheingold. Our engineer is Tyler Morris. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Two-Way Street Podcast. See you again soon.
Thank you.